This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Last month, the University of Arkansas hosted Michael Dorcas, herpetologist and professor at Davidson College in Davidson, North Carolina, to speak on campus. Dorcas's research focuses on the ecology and conservation of amphibians and reptiles. He stopped by the Carver Center for Public Radio to speak with Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas about one of his areas of study, invasive pythons in Everglades National Park. Burmese pythons should not be living in the wild in the United States, but hobbyists tend to like to keep them as pets. And because people either let them out or they have escaped, they are in the wild and causing quite the problem. And as Dorcas told Christina, they're moving northward.
Southern Florida is the place where they're, where they were first detected and where they've been thriving. And they've, are expanding their range northward in Southern Florida to some degree. Exactly how far, we don't know yet, but they've certainly expanded their range considerably since they were first recognized as being established in Everglades National Park, which is in the very southern tip of the Florida Peninsula. And then subsequently, they've been found on Key Largo, which is the first of the many islands, extending down off the tip of Florida.
Well, so here's my question. Do more people just have pythons as pets in Florida, or how are they winding up down there as opposed to other areas?
That's a really good question, and we're not quite sure. Certainly, the subtropical climate of South Florida facilitates survival of individuals that might be released or escaped, and it's done so for many species of reptile. I mean, there are Nile monitors; these are lizards that can get to be 8 feet long that are now established and reproducing in Florida. There are numerous other species of lizard. There are boa constrictors in one part of Florida, that have been there for a long time. So certainly the subtropical climate probably promotes their, ability to survive in the United States when typically they would be in more tropical areas.
Here in northwest Arkansas, we're sort of on the northwest corner of the southeastern United States. Mm-hmm. So if I, let's say, myself and four of my best friends, we each have a python that we can't handle them anymore. And so we all go down to the Buffalo River and we let our pythons go at the same time. Would they be able to sustain themselves here in this climate?
That's a really good question, and we don't know the answer to that. There's a lot of factors that go into whether those animals could survive. And specifically, you're probably talking about surviving the winter. And, so both their behavior and their physiological tolerances play roles in those, and in whether they can survive. And in addition to the habitat, are there places where, if they want to, they could get deep underground? Are there armadillo burrows, which I know there are a lot of armadillo burrows around here, that might facilitate their ability to survive the winter. But we just don't know.
Well, you mentioned the size of a monitor, the lizard.
Mm-hmm.
How big? I mean, pythons, we're not talking, a 5-foot black snake.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, Burmese pythons are certainly one of the largest snakes in the world. The record size that's been found in Everglades National Park is around a little over 18 feet. But there have been, several snakes that have been found that are over 17, and then you got, more and more as you go down. But certainly a large female python, the females get larger than the males, can approach, potentially 20 feet.
And how big around?
It's going to vary depending on their reproductive status. If it's a female that, has just laid eggs, she might be relatively thin, but they might be as big around as, certainly a large person's thigh, that kind of thing.
I never thought I was scared of snakes. And I went to the reptile museum that we have here. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just a guy that, it's essentially his, kind of personal collection of reptiles.
Sure.
But, yeah, I was a little freaked out. Yeah.
I mean, they're snakes like any other snake. And so the danger they pose to humans is probably very, very small. But it certainly is possible that, a wild python could kill a human. It happens in captivity. People that keep these large snakes in captivity every few years, you see the news and there's somebody that's killed by their pet python. And usually it's the python, it's feeding time and the snake gets a hold of them or, something related to that. And, the snake is normally a very docile snake, but it mistakes, them for food. And if a large snake like that gets wrapped around you, it can certainly kill you.
And that's how they kill their prey, is by constricting.
Yeah, they're constrictors. So they bite their prey and get a hold of it with their mouth, wrap around it, and essentially, you know, kill it that way. But, you know, we have many constrictors here that are native to the United States. You mentioned, you know, black snakes or black rat snakes are constrictors. King snakes are constrictors. You know, so there are many snakes, not just pythons and boas, that use that technique to kill their prey.
So they don't really pose a threat to humans. What kinds of problems are they causing in the Everglades?
Well, they pose a very low threat to humans. That's for sure. But the main problem that appears to be that we're documenting is the impact on native fauna, and specifically the impacts that we've seen on common mammals. And so we've seen both temporally, both before and after pythons have proliferated, and spatially, based on where they have expanded their range, declines, very severe declines, in once very common species of mammals that are consistent with pythons as being the reason that these animals have disappeared. And so, for example, in Everglades National Park, there are 99% fewer raccoons than there were before pythons proliferated. You know, 99% fewer possums, 87% fewer bobcats. Rabbits appear to be essentially eliminated from large portions of Everglades National Park. So there appear to be just across the board species that were once very common to see, that have just been nearly removed from the park. And it's very consistent with pythons as the major factor affecting them.
Those are huge percentage.
Yes.
That's
very huge.
Huge.
Right, exactly. And so the next question, obviously is, well, if you have those kind of declines in these mammals, what, are the cascading effects that that has on the ecosystem overall? And so we're starting to do some research to start examining those kinds of things as well. But those kinds of, anytime you have a food web that's as complex as that we have in the Everglades, it's really difficult to predict ahead of time exactly what the impacts of altering, the abundances in such a drastic way can be.
I mean, this is a relatively new problem. I mean, it hasn't been, late 90s or so, maybe?
Yeah, but pythons were recognized as established in the year 2000.
Okay.
And we have, since that time, now they certainly were established long before that, but they just occurred in densities that, we'd find a python here and there, but people didn't really think necessarily, oh, these things are reproducing here. And about the year 2000, scientists started saying, I think these things are probably established here. And since that time, the number that we encounter has increased dramatically, and since that time also we've seen the impact on mammals in a relatively short time, within essentially a decade.
What kind of numbers are we talking?
Numbers of pythons?
Mm-hmm.
That is a really good question and something that we really need to know, but is extraordinarily difficult to answer. Pythons are extremely secretive, just like other snakes. And in fact, some of the research that we've done, in fact, with my primary colleague on most of this research, J.D. Wilson at University of Arkansas, shows that the detectability of these snakes is less than 1%. So what that means is, if you go out looking for pythons and you find one snake, you've walked by more than 99 without seeing them. And so they're extremely difficult to find, which makes estimating their numbers very difficult as well. But the fact that they're a cold-blooded animal, or an ectotherm, means that they require, an individual snake requires much less energy to grow and reproduce than, say, a warm-blooded animal like a mammal. And therefore, because they require less energy and less food, they presumably can occur at considerably greater densities than a comparable apex predator that was a mammal that was introduced as well. And so that probably plays a very large role in the dramatic impacts that they appear to have had in Everglades National Park, is that potential to occur at just incredible densities.
Well, so chances are good, you know, you, I mean, I've never been to southern Florida, but I know, you know, I picture the big flat bottom boats with the big fan behind it. You know, you're taking a tour of the Everglades. So I'm a tourist and I'm on one of those boats.
Sure.
Chances are good that I won't see one.
Exactly. You might go buy 10 of them. We don't know for sure because, you know, there have been numerous estimates of densities of these animals. And most of them are just, you know, at best, you know, educated guesses, and some are just total guesses. But we really don't have a good idea. Are there, you know, tens of thousands of them, or are there hundreds of thousands of them? You know, they're spread over a very large area now. We're probably talking about, you know, at least 8,000 square kilometers, maybe 10,000 square kilometers. So it's a very large area. Additionally, much of the area is essentially, it's at least not easily accessible by humans because there are vast areas in southern Florida where there are really no roads that go anywhere close to a large part of the place where, you know, where pythons probably occur.
Well, so what is the solution to the problem?
It's an excellent question. And there have been various efforts to, you know, increased detectability. For example, you know, there have been efforts to use dogs to sniff them out. And certainly, you know, that might help in certain situations. For example, if there's a wading bird rookery and you want to make sure there's no pythons feeding on the nestling birds and stuff, you could bring dogs around and maybe sniff out, you know, pythons that are right in that area. Or if there's a python in a neighborhood, you know, somebody saw, we need to go find it in this neighborhood, you know, that kind of thing. But we don't have any approach so far that shows any promise of suppressing the snakes across their entire range. We may be able to do it in very localized areas that are fairly accessible, but across the entire range that they're occurring now in South Florida, we don't really have anything that shows any promise of you know, even suppressing their populations.
So, I mean, you could maybe isolate one small area and try to catch them all in that area, but
possibly.
You leave that area and they're just going to infiltrate the area again.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a very difficult problem to manage.
You mentioned mammals that the pythons are eating a lot of the mammals. But what about aren't there a lot of alligators in the Everglades?
Yeah.
Is there some sort of wolf pack, or what am I trying to say, you know, alpha male sort of thing going on there?
You mean like competition between the apex predators? Actually, the alligators in the Everglades, at least the data that we have, show they eat a lot of snakes and they eat turtles and things like that. They will eat mammals and wading birds from time to time, but their primary diet is not mammals. And so there's probably not that as much overlap as we might think with that. And actually, pythons have been known to eat alligators and vice versa, too. You know, if you're a big gator and there's a smaller python that goes by, you might grab it and eat it just like you would a big water snake or something. And so so certainly they're both, you know, top predators, and not much is going to mess with an adult, you know, 10-foot adult alligator. But certainly they prey on each other. We have documentation of that occurring both ways.
Has there been more regulation as far as having exotic animals as pets?
Yeah, there are now laws in Florida, you know, because of this, that make it illegal to own, you know, some of these large constrictors without very specific permits that you have to have. And then there has been some additional legislation, modifications to the Lacey Act, which deals with importing animals, that has basically made it illegal to import certain species of large constrictor, including Burmese pythons, and also made it illegal to sell them across state lines. So it's really impacted the people that, you know, would sell and import and breed these animals quite a bit.
Why did you first become interested in this python issue?
Well, I mean, ever since, you know, like many herpetologists, you know, I grew up just fascinated with snakes. And like I told you before, this is a mess, but it's a fascinating mess. And so there are all sorts of very interesting questions that need to be addressed and that can be addressed using this situation, you know, looking at the impact of apex predators on ecosystems and those kind of things, and then also trying to figure out ways to manage this situation. So there's a lot of interest in that regard, but it's also, I love snakes. And so that was why, you know, I've studied snakes, you know, for a long time, and that was what got me involved in this, was my expertise and experience with studying snakes.
What is it about snakes that you love?
That's a really good question, and I've thought about that a lot. And you know, they're unique. I mean, certainly when I was a little kid, you know, it was, I could go behind my grandparents' house and turn over rocks, and I could always find some little snakes, you know, and I was always just fascinated with them. You know, they're able to survive without legs. They're able to do all of these really amazing things, and there are snakes that you know, the more you study them and the more you learn about them, the more remarkable they are. I mean, for example, these pythons, you know, have the ability to, you know, if there's plenty of food around, they can eat like pigs and grow and reproduce rapidly. But if there's not enough food around, they can go a year without eating and be just fine. You know, just really remarkable, remarkable animals.
That was Michael Dorcas, herpetologist and professor at Davidson College in North Carolina. He is the co-author of Invasive Pythons in the United States, Ecology of an Introduced Predator. He spoke with Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas while he was in town last month.